32, 38 degrees this morning in Kenosha, 37 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. That is the first few seconds of what I think is one of the most gorgeous violin concertos in the repertoire, the concerto of Alexander Glazunov. And in part one of today's morning show, we're going to be talking with the brilliant young violinist who is going to be performing this masterwork this coming weekend at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. First of all, we're so happy to have with us Dr. Alvaro Garcia, who heads up orchestral activities at the University of Wisconsin Parkside and will be on the podium for Saturday afternoon's concert at 3 o'clock, which will include the Glazunov Concerto as well as the first suite from Georges Bizet's opera Carmen. And playing the violin for the Glazunov Concerto, Nina Frongian, who is the current Howard Brown artist in residence at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and a Racine native whom we will be meeting today. So a warm welcome to both of you to the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you both here. So Dr. Garcia, maybe you could say a word first of all about this ongoing program with the Howard Brown artist in residence, how long that has been in place, and what kind of musicians have been the recipient of that mm-hmm. honor?
So, we have been very fortunate to have the Howard Brown endowment established by his widow, Betsy Brown, and her generosity allows us to bring artists every year with to play with the orchestras. And, you know, we had people like Paul Cortese or Rachel Blambikis or David Mason, yes, as previous recipients, who are great artists nationally and internationally, come and play with the orchestras. And for us, the community and the students at Parkes, it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to have such a great talent play with the orchestra. And this is the case again with Nina Frongen, who comes and shares her talents. And the other beautiful part of this program is that the people that we bring as a soloist have a connection directly with our local community, right? Mm. So Paul Cortez and David and Rachel were from Kenosha, and this is the first time finally we get someone coming from Racine. Mm. We are just delighted to have Nina perform with us in this orchestra. She's a wonderful violin player that is just going to wow the audiences, I'm sure.
No doubt. We're so glad that this opportunity is here for us to meet you and to explore a little bit about your life and career. So as so often is the case, it makes sense to start at the beginning. So tell us a little bit about the experience of growing up in Racine and at what point music and the violin in particular entered your life.
Sure. So I started playing music at a pretty young age. My dad is a musician. He's self-taught on many instruments. He grew up in Lebanon, played in a band there, and was interested in learning how to play many different instruments. So there was always music around. I was always interested in playing. So I started on piano at 6, and it was kind of decided among my family that I would play the violin when I turned 9. When they offer it at school, right? So I played in public schools. I started at Gersted Edgar Home Elementary School, continued in public schools, and really got more serious about it in high school, which I think many might consider kind of late to start private lessons. But I started lessons with Anne Lamar Heidi, who's actually playing in the orchestra right now with us, and it's amazing. And, you know, it was really cool that she gave me a chance. At that point, you know, I was in high school and didn't really have, like, the strongest technical foundation. But, you know, I think in the end it didn't really matter for me. Like, I kind of was hard on myself for a long time. Like, oh, it was kind of late to, you know, we see all these string players starting at 4. And you see YouTube videos of all these young violinists playing the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto when they're 10, and it's just amazing. But, you know, I think it's okay for people to have their own journeys, and I'm really happy with where I am now. So,
right. And, I mean, certainly not always, but there are plenty of situations in which those wunderkinds that are doing so much so early, I mean, walk away from the violin, I mean, and never want to pick it up again. I mean, so there's all kinds of ways in which that does not necessarily work out, and it sounds like this has worked out absolutely marvelously for you. Did it make sense to you, to your young mind, that someone would just hand you the violin at the age of 9 and saying, this is what you're playing now? I mean, in your family, did that seem like the right way to do it, and did that seem like a good choice for you?
I mean, at the time, I don't really think I thought about it much. I wanted to figure it out. I was eager to learn. I spent a lot of time just learning songs by ear, probably when I didn't even really have much technique to support that, but it was good. I think all of that really ended up serving me in the long run, just wanting to learn, having the eagerness to learn, and being able to keep exploring other things too, you know, not spending my whole life with music from such an early age. I think it was good to explore other interests too.
Right. So what in particular was the spark? I think you said it was at some point in high school. What was the spark or the impetus that made you start to realize, I should be more serious about this, I should really devote myself to this in a different way? Did anything in particular inspire that shift in your perspective?
That's a good question. I can't really say there were any particular events. I know I was always very inspired when I saw really great violinists perform. Even I can't even tell you who it was that came and visited our high school. I remember a small chamber orchestra of some sort came, and they were just a little non-traditional, and they were talking a lot about the music, and they were really passionate about it, and they sounded great. And at a certain point, I just was like, I can't really see myself doing anything else, or I don't really want to invest my time in doing anything else. So, yeah.
By the way, who did you play under at Horlick? Who was the orchestra director then?
It was Don Young.
Oh.
Yeah.
we used to live right down the street from Don Young,
nice.
So I knew him well, you bet. Great, great musician.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what happened after high school.
Sure. Yeah, so I went to University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I studied with Bernard Zink, Dr. Bernard Zink there. And then I went on to grad school at University of Colorado Boulder.
Great school.
And yeah, it was a great school. And I just ended up freelancing in the Denver, Boulder, Colorado area for about 10 years. I just recently moved to Atlanta in the fall. But yeah, just had a very diverse experience freelancing. You know, just one day I'm playing a wedding, one day I'm playing in an orchestra, another day I'm playing an opera. I got to play with some pretty notable artists over the years, and Red Rocks Amphitheater with certain singer-songwriters.
And, sure.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Hmm. It's an adventure, for sure.
Right. It sounds like you have had an interest in and the opportunity to explore a lot of different musical styles. Are there particular musical genres that feel especially at home to you, or certain styles in which you feel a really close affinity?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I get a chance to play a lot of different kinds of music, especially with a group I play with called Sphere Ensemble. We're a 14-piece string ensemble located in Denver, and it's musician-founded. We pretty much program our own concerts, and a lot of my colleagues in the group do the arrangements, and we've just gotten to play so many different kinds of music. I think one of my favorites, I love playing tango music.
Ah.
Something about it, I don't know, just sparks my interest. I don't know. And I also just really love playing. I'm Armenian and Arab, so Armenian folk music is, you know, just really close to home. It's really cool. We got to play Chamber Symphony by an Armenian composer with Sphere Ensemble in the fall, and that was just really special. Yeah, I would say those two for sure.
Fantastic. So what is it like to relocate to a different place, in this case Atlanta, Georgia, a great American city? But what does that kind of mean for you musically and professionally? What kind of an adventure does this represent?
Oh, gosh, I was so anxious about it because I had been establishing myself for so long in one area, and I was like, what is going to happen if I move somewhere? So I honestly emailed like 80 different people. I kind of reached out to anyone in my network, like, does anyone know anyone in Atlanta? And anyone I did know there, I reached out to them, and I got some really amazing just lists of personnel managers for all the orchestras and different people who contract weddings and all this. And, you know, I got there, and I'm so grateful for how things ended up, because I have a studio of private students already built up, and it hasn't even been a year, you know, a full year. And I'm already subbing with the opera there and the ballet, and things really came together. I think what I realized from the whole thing was that the music world really is quite small, and any connections you make, any people you meet, it will translate wherever you end up, really. So
right. Well, and especially when you do really good work, I mean, the news of that travels remarkably fast as well. So Atlanta's feeling like home now.
Oh yeah, it's getting there. You know, I was in Denver for so long, or in Colorado for so long. You know, it just takes time. It is really, really fun to explore, though. Like, just, it's totally different from Colorado. It's so diverse. Just any food you can think of, you can get, and which is, you know, very important to me. As a, you know, musicians, we love food. But yeah, I still travel to Denver pretty often to play, and it's nice to kind of have the best of both worlds.
Sure. So. Tell us about getting the invitation to come back to this area as the Howard Brown Artist in Residence, and how nice was it to receive an invitation like that?
Oh, I was thrilled. I mean, I honestly didn't know about this program until Dr. Garcia invited me, and I was also just thrilled that my former teacher, Ann Lamar Heidi, recommended me for it, which it was just really special. I have to say, like, I'm mostly an orchestral player, and I play a lot of chamber music, too, and I don't really get the opportunity to solo with an orchestra very often. So I was thrilled at that opportunity, and also for the opportunity to come work with high school students where I grew up. I think that's, you know, just like I mentioned, I was totally inspired by people who came in. And maybe, you know, a lot of the time those people probably don't realize how much they inspired people, but I think it's really important.
Mm, wonderful. Dr. Garcia, give us some sense of what has been happening this week or is still to happen in terms of the kind of work that Nina will be doing with various students.
Yeah, so although the main impact is that to play a concert with the orchestras, one of the positions of this guest artist is actually to give back to the community, right? That the program gives back to the community, and by doing so, what we try to do is just always reach to several high schools, whatever we can fit in the schedule, of course, in a busy week, and it's not always a week that will work for everyone. But, you know, in this case, with Nina, we are able to go to three high schools. Bradford High School will be actually today, and in the next couple of days, we'll visit Case High School and Horlick High School in Racine. So at least the impact that we want to send, or I like to send to the students, is that now you are in high school, you are sitting at those chairs in the orchestra, but look at what people like Nina Fronjan are doing, who were sitting not long ago at those chairs in the high school, so they can have a direct relationship to what the professional world is in music.
Wonderful. How exciting. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking in part one of today's morning show with Alvaro Garcia, who heads up the orchestra program at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, our neighbors to the north. And Nina Fronjan is with us as well, a Racine native who is back in the area as the Howard Brown Artist in Residence. And this Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, a concert in beautiful Francis Bedford Hall, a concert that will feature the Glazunov Violin Concerto. Nina, did you choose the Glazunov Concerto for this concert?
I did.
And tell us why. I mean, tell us what draws you to it.
Sure. Well, part of it was logistically, like, what romantic concerto? I just wanted to play a romantic concerto for some reason. what romantic concerto is not 45 minutes long or just, like, extremely demanding for the orchestra. You know, I just didn't want to put that much pressure. We only have two rehearsals, you know. So Glazunov felt good, and it's one that I spent a lot of time with in grad school, and I love it. You know, it's just so, juicy and... it's just so fun to play. So it just made sense to me.
Mm. Let's hear just a little bit more of the Glazunov Violin Concerto that will be on this concert coming up Saturday afternoon.
Thank you.
Gorgeous music by Alexander Glazunov, his violin concerto, which will be part of this concert coming up Saturday afternoon. Alvaro Garcia, we should say a quick word, of course, about the amazing and formidable woman for which that beautiful concert hall is named, someone whom we just lost. What do you want to say about the great Frances Bedford?
It's a sad story, but also, as I was telling the orchestra not long ago, that Frances Bedford passed away is sad, but I have to say that Fran, which was a marvelous, wonderful person, a dear friend, and someone who came to so many concerts, such a big patron and generous to us and to the music department. That's thanks to her. We have Frances Bedford Concert Hall, which is a gem, acoustical gem, in our area, and she brought so much joy to our lives, and I have to say, and that's what we like to remember her by, right? All the joy, her happiness, and her positivity that always had for us coming to our concerts, and you know, all her support that she always drove us through to us in the music faculty and students too. I mean, there's still Facebook keeps reminding me of wonderful pictures of our students with her after a concert. So, but she had lived a wonderful, fruitful life, you know, up to the age of 98. So it's fantastic. So you know, we keep her close to our hearts, and it's my hope that I personally dedicate this concert to her memory. So.
Very good. Again, the concert is this Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the beautiful Frances Bedford Concert Hall. It will feature the Alexander Glazunov Violin Concerto played by Nina Frongian, the Howard Brown Artist in Residence. The concert is also going to feature the first suite from Georges Bizet's opera Carmen. Dr. Garcia, if people want to attend Saturday's concert, what do they need to do?
So they can just buy the tickets online or at the door. The online, I believe, is if you do a Google search by the Rita at UW Parkside, you are going to land in our page and just go to the ticketing side of the concert, and it's the orchestras, and they can buy those tickets online. So hopefully we'll have a sold-out concert, so we'll see.
Very good. Dr. Alvaro Garcia, great to see you again. Thank you so much for joining us today. And Nina Frongian, what a pleasure to meet you and to hear about your life and career in music. And we know many people are excited to hear you perform the Glazunov Concerto this coming Saturday. Very best wishes to you, and thanks again for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks so much.
And here's a bit of the Bizet that will be played on Saturday afternoon's concert. And stay with us for part two of the morning show coming up here on WGTD. The time is 8:35, and you are listening to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD, FM 91.1, Kenosha Racine, Elkhorn and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. And here comes part two of today's program. So yes, that's Beatles, but through the lens of John Rutter. We're going to talk about the Beatles now for the next few minutes in a little more authentic fashion, courtesy of three guests who are joining me in the studios, three amazing musicians. First of all, James Schatzman, who of course has been on the morning show any number of times, director of the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin. Also joining us, Mark Paffrath, gifted musician in so many different ways, and someone who I am meeting today for the very first time, Marvin Dykus. He moved away from Racine just as I moved to southeastern Wisconsin, so we're two ships in the night, but certainly I've heard all kinds of things about Marvin Dykus over the years, but he has made his home in Texas for quite some time, but is back in his hometown to perform with Mark and the Choral Arts Society under the direction of James Schatzman in what promises to be a really amazing concert coming up this Saturday night. A concert which I'm sad to say is sold out. But nevertheless, we want to talk about a long and winding road, a Beatles retrospective, which is coming up this weekend. And it's an opportunity for some great musicians to talk about the Beatles and about the experience of making music together. James Schatzman, Mark Paffrath, Marvin Dykus, we welcome all of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Thanks, Greg.
Good to have all of you here. Jim, let's start with you and about just how special this event is and how special it is to the Choral Arts Society.
Well, it's really an interesting situation. You know, I've heard from members of the band, you know, how amazing it is to do this music with a full-blown choir, as well as, I got to tell you, the folks in the Choral Arts Society, we're all amazed by the way that rock bands put things together. And we've always kind of, in the back of my mind certainly, wanted to be in a rock band. Never had the aptitude or the opportunity, but to bring these two things together is really, really an amazing thrill.
Do I remember that Beatles has been part of the Choral Arts before?
Yes. We performed with the same ensemble in 2019. Hmm. So this is a remix or reprise and with some additions and changes. And so there's so much. Lennon McCartney wrote about 300 songs. So it's really hard to know what to leave in and what to leave out. And so this gave us a chance to come back and bring some of those other things in and some lesser known as well as some of the best known tunes that they wrote.
Right. I know that Mark Paffrath has been in the mix before. Is this a first in terms of Marvin Dykus joining you on a concert?
No, Marvin joined us in 2019 as well, and that was my first time to meet him as well. What a gifted musician. It's so fun to work with these guys. They have such a passion for what they're doing, but they're just technically so sound. It's pretty amazing.
Fantastic. Excited to talk with both of you, and I understand the two of you go way back. Tell us just how far back.
Is Mark. You know, I can say I hate to say it, and then someone the other day said, why do you hate to say that? And I said, you're right, I don't hate to say it. But I think this year we've known each other 50 years.
Probably.
Yeah,
yes.
We go back to 1972 or 3 and playing music in high school. So, yes, we go way back.
Tell us what you recall about the very first musical collaborations that you did. Marvin, what's your recollection of when it really started?
Well, I'm at Mark. I'm not going to tell you.
On the steps of Memorial Hall. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. We met each other. I think we were juniors in high school, maybe?
Something like that.
And Mark played mandolin and violin and guitar. I don't know if he even played guitar at that point. But we started playing together with a band called the Hobo's Blues Band in Mark's basement. And then we realized that we could play. We really like Seals and Crofts and old Beatles stuff. So we started doing like old Seals and Crofts and singing together. We liked our harmonies together. So we formed a duo, Paffrath and Dykehouse. Then we went from there. We had some more bands. And Mark is also a drummer, so he played drums in Marvin and the Dogs. And he played drums in Hobo's Blues Band too as well. We went to Walden. For our senior year, and the best part about Walden was, or you might have gone 2 years,
yeah,
was we got to have a band, and our music, curriculum was playing one hour a day with a band.
Wow, and you don't mean awesome. A John Philip Sousa band?
Yeah, well, we mean like a blues, but we had a blues. We played a little bit of everything, but it was wonderful. And Mark's very talented, and I've known him. I love him like a brother.
Absolutely.
So describe to our listeners kind of what the magic is when there is a musician with whom you feel such a close kinship. I mean, what does that feel like, and where does that come from, or what's the key to what makes the two of you such seamless musical partners?
You want to take that?
Go ahead.
Well, I just think we know each other really well. And so there's a lot of it. You don't have to. There's the anticipation is there, so you kind of know what the other person's going to do, and how they're going to, what they're going to do, and what they're going to sing, and where they're going to sing and play or whatever. That's a lot of it right there.
And I think there's a feeling of being able to really rely on somebody.
Well, there's trust. There's a trust issue.
Yeah. Where you're sort of both kind of leaning into each other, and it just. Then
yeah.
You go forward. That's the feeling I get.
Fantastic. Mark, I know that you are the son of a very musical mother, and I don't remember your dad, but it is no surprise that you are the musician that you are in terms of the stock that you come from. How about you, Marvin Dykus?
My folks were more homespun. My mother was a keyboard player and organ player. My dad was a singer, and they did mostly like church. They worked in the church. They were not secular, but I always loved it because when my dad would do a Christmas song, he sounded like Bing. It was awesome. When he did the bells, I heard the bells on Christmas morn or whatever, he sounded like Bing. I go, I love that. That's great.
Very good.
And he's 100. Yeah, I'm visiting him, and so I'm just. He's 100 years old.
Wow.
Still lives alone, drives sometimes.
Does he ever sing anymore?
No. I don't think he does.
I
bet he does.
I bet he could.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I have something queued up that features your singing, if you want me to play it, but I know you have your guitars here. If you want to sing right here in the studio, that's okay, too, whatever your preference is.
Go either way.
Yeah, we can do one.
Okay.
We were going to do one of the low ones.
Low is good in the morning,
it's
isn't it?
In the morning.
And it's short, too. So, and
this
is one that supposedly, I think I have the story right, that Paul wrote when he was like a teenager, 17, something
really?
Like that.
Enough. I didn't tune, but I'm still in tune from yesterday.
I didn't. I'm still out of tune. Okay.
1, 2, 3.
1 day you'll see. There's the I've gone. For tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Someday. I was the one, but tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. And now the time has come, so my love, I must go. someday you'll find that I have gone. But tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Yes, tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. And now the time has come, so my love, I must go. And though I lose a friend, in the end you will know. Oh, one day you'll find that I have gone. Tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun.
Love that song. A great, great Beatles song, I'll Follow the Sun.
Love that one.
I assume that's on the program for Saturday night.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about Saturday night's concert by the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin called A Long and Winding Road, A Beatles Retrospective. Jim Schatzman will be conducting, of course, the Choral Arts Society, and two very special guest artists will be part of it, Mark Paffrath and Marvin Dykus.
What do you say about Jim here? What an amazing guy.
Oh, of course, absolutely.
You know, holy cow, you know, he puts all this stuff together, and he's got some stamina.
Absolutely.
I was going to say something else, but I'm not going to because we're on the radio. Yeah,
and,
he amazes me. It just amazes me.
And great musical vision, for sure.
Absolutely.
Jim, just say a quick word about the challenge for a group like the Choral Arts Society that, maybe last month was singing Brahms,
right.
Shifting over and doing Beatles. And how much do you want them to sound like the Beatles versus how much do you want them to sound like the Choral Arts Society singing the Beatles?
Right.
There's a lot of different ways to handle this interesting challenge.
Absolutely. And over the years, we've really cultivated a way of producing the sounds that are appropriate to the music that we're doing. We've done musical theater. We've done, like you said, we've done Brahms and Mozart and most of the substantial classical literature. We've sung with symphony orchestras. And so there's a way, and you know this as a vocal instructor, there's a way to produce a sound that is authentic to the literature that you're doing. And so we do some specific things with the way we shape our vowels, some specific things with the way we phrase. You know, in rock music, when you get to the end of a phrase, you often kind of throw away that last note. You read a score and it says it's a half note. You listen to the recording and it's barely an eighth note and it's gone. And so, it's about the stylistic things that you do. So the chorus is not going to actually sound like we do when we're singing Brahms. We're going to take a completely different approach. However, I would say this too. The Beatles have such an array of styles. Mm-hmm. And so the piece, we're doing a stunning arrangement of Because, which was inspired by Yoko hanging around playing Moonlight Sonata. And John went, I think we could do something with that.
Right.
And Because grew out of that. I think that's a very classical approach to how you sing it. So we're going to do a very rich, warm sound on that particular piece. But when you're doing Here Comes the Sun, you need to lighten up a bit. You need to throw away those little notes at the end. You need to brighten up your vowels just a bit so that the diction is crisp and that we can understand every word. And so really it's a stylistic thing. And the chorus has become pretty good at being flexible to what we're doing. When we do Carmina Burana next year, they'll slide right into that.
Right.
When we did the Beatles, it took just a week or so, and they were like, okay. A couple weeks later, we know what you want now.
Absolutely.
And so this is going to be, in many ways, the Beatles as the Beatles intended it to be heard, or if the Beatles had access to a full chorus.
Mm.
You talk about pieces like Let It Be and The Long and Winding Road, where they're epic. You've got strings and horns, which we'll also have at this concert, and choir. The choir parts are right in the Beatles score. You didn't have to do anything radical. You just had to transcribe what was out of the score. But having a full choir rather than, an octet in a studio adds to the kind of epic nature of this. So it really has a more expansive feel than the original, but it's authentic. You'll recognize this immediately as the Beatles. The thrill for us to sing with a rock band It's just, I mean, it's just hard to believe. You just, the chorus is smiling the whole time. Mm. You know, I have to keep my head. I have to keep saying, stay in the concert. You know, you got to run stuff. You can't just lush out.
Right.
But it's really a blast to hear these guys and just to be a part of that. It's a unique thrill.
Well, and I'd just like to add, and you could probably speak to this maybe more eloquently than I can, but there's going to be a little bit of everything. And by that, I mean, there are going to be some songs that are just a band. There are some songs that are almost more solo with the chorus. Then there's songs with the band and the chorus. Mm-hmm. And then there's songs with just the chorus. Mm. And that's, to me, what makes it such a wonderful mix of all kinds of different textures and sounds and feels and, you know, and what makes it so fun to be a part. I mean, it's really a thrill. Mm-hmm. It's thrilling, you know.
And it's quite a ride. I mean, you know, like you said, you're going this diversity of styles, and you'll hear something like Yesterday with four strings and a guitar and a solo voice, and that's it. That texture is so transparent, and so it's got a sheen to it. Then you have something like A Long and Winding Road, where you just got this wide-open, epic sound that just comes at you. When we did the program in 2019, the Hey Jude was so compelling that we did that last little chorus about 15 times. And by the time, you know, we about halfway through, people had turned their phones on with their lights were waving their phones in the crowd. As you know, it was, I mean, it was really,
it was moving.
The energy, yes, it was very moving.
Yeah, they're still very much with us, aren't they, all these years later? I mean, and to think about a band that actually played together an amazingly short amount of time, and yet the ongoing legacy is incredible. Marvin Dykus, how far back do you go with the Beatles? I mean, were you playing and singing the Beatles back in high school?
Absolutely. Yeah, my second record was Sgt. Pepper's, I guess.
Oh, there you go.
But, absolutely. And I just want to say what a thrill it is to play with the chorus and to work with Jim and stuff. It, like when we're playing, and you have these voices behind us doing that amazing, making that amazing sound. It is just incredible.
It is.
There's nothing that, when I go back to Texas, I go, you wouldn't believe what I just did. My wife sings in the Austin chorus, and I was there, and I go, hey, I'm going to sing with the chorus next week.
Just like
really
you.
Great. It's gonna, you wouldn't believe it. It's just like.
By the way, amazing. What took you to far away Texas? Anything in particular?
Well, the weather, for one thing.
I can understand.
And the music, you know. And so I've had a pretty good career in Austin.
Oh, yeah.
I've been traveling play with a bunch of different musicians and travel the world pretty much. And now kind of getting old and settling down a little bit.
Aren't we all?
But, yeah. I have my own band now called Grouchy Like Riley.
Oh, I saw that on YouTube. Yeah.
And we're not really grouchy, but Riley was kind of grouchy. Right? We're named after a great piano player who was a friend of ours.
I want to play just a little bit of something called Big Old Train that I found on YouTube.
Oh, my goodness.
That features the two of you, actually.
Oh, boy.
A couple of years ago.
This is a song. This is written by a woman named Kimmy Rhodes, who actually was in the Willie Nelson camp. She's a friend of mine in Austin. She's written a bunch of stuff for Emmylou Harris and all kinds of people. But she's a great songwriter.
Yeah. So, and this is you singing, and Mark is joining you on.
I think this is before I knew this song, but you can play it. You can play it anyway.
I was on a train, taking me somewhere far away. Where is it? And I don't care. I could be happy anywhere. On a big old train, flying down the track, rocking to the rhythm of the clickety-clack. Hey, engineer, make the whistle blow, holler all aboard, and away we go.
Big Old Train and Marvin Dykus and Mark Paffrath maybe 12 years ago, which I found on YouTube and was so happy to hear that. Jim Schatzman, I should think just kind of deciding who gets to sing what and also what songs to do out of this immense catalog of possibilities, that had to be a challenge in and of itself.
It is, partly because there are certain songs you just have to do. You know, you can't do a Beatles program without doing Yesterday. And like Marvin, one of my first albums that I was absolutely addicted to was Sgt. Pepper's. It was Revolver before that, but then yeah. Sgt. Pepper, I wore that record out. I still have it, but I can't play it anymore. It's just worn out. And so, you know, it's such a joy to even begin to look at the catalog. We worked off something that Mark and I both referred to as the Beatles Bible. There's a book of every song transcribed. It's almost 800 pages of score, which is how we built most of these arrangements, working right off the originals. But yeah, so you got, you know, I don't know, 150, 160 songs in that book or more. And how do you decide what to do? Part of it's just, you know, what do we love? We sat around and just threw tunes on the table. It's like, okay, if we're going to do a Beatles program, we each had things we said, we've got to do this. And in our second rendition, we really said, you know, what are some of the more kind of offbeat things that people would appreciate hearing that they're going to go, I barely remember that, but boy, that's a wonderful song. And so,
or maybe even I didn't know that was the Beatles.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was very collaborative. I mean, from the first time that we thought about this, we involved all three of us and our associate conductor and my colleague, Pat Badger. And we sat together and just started knocking stuff out. And, you know, the list was like 50 songs. And then you kind of say, well, okay, that's that's an 8-hour concert. Yeah. So what can we wipe out? You know, and then we'd wipe one out and Mark would shed a little tear. And then we'd wipe another one out and I'd shed a little tear. And it's like, we kind of got the thing down. So where it
just
needed
all
to
been bawling your heads off at putting this concert together.
Well, and now we're over it.
Everybody got a little piece of, I think, what they were thinking of, and I think that makes it great, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, speaking of bawling your eyes out, of course, this concert Saturday night is sold out. You have a waiting list, but otherwise, that says something about these guest artists that you have engaged, that so many people want to be part of what I'm sure is going to be a great concert.
It's really wonderful in that, you know, both Marvin and Mark have their own following. We have our own following. Yeah. You bring that energy together. Yeah. And then you just, you know, all you do is mention the Beatles and people want to be a part of this. And so it's going to be, we sold like 80% of our tickets after just announcing 2 weeks after the concert. We've never had anything like that happen. But the last Beatles concert we did was a sellout as well. And so people were waiting and they bought their tickets early. I told everybody I knew, if you have any interest in this at all, buy your tickets now. And so we do have a waiting list. And, you know, when you're dealing with 500 audience members, someone will call up and say, I'm not feeling well, or, you know, my travel plans have changed. And so we do have a waiting list. And so if you want to call the Choral Arts office at 634-3250, you can give them a call and get on a waiting list, and we will. I'm sure people are going to show up if we don't have tickets, and they'll be waiting until probably 5 minutes before the concert. And if we have a place for them to sit, we'll seat them.
And it's a cool space. It's that the AAA Chapter 838 where we did the Verdi Requiem together.
Yes.
And this is not the Verdi Requiem. This is a whole other thing. And what an exciting night this is going to be! A long and winding road, a Beatles retrospective. And the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, and on the podium, Jim Schatzman, and two very, very special guest artists, Mark Paffrath and Marvin Dykus, two of Racine's own, who will be a part of this really special concert Saturday night. I want to thank all three of you for being part of the morning show today.
It
was really exciting to talk with all of you, and wish you a wonderful and crowded and happy concert Saturday night.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.